With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. On this week's archive edition, we explore the influence and legacy of artist, poet and musician Jean-Michel Basquiat.
We were like, you know, outside of the mainstream culture, we were aware of that, counterculture. We were actively looking to like just stir shit up in as many ways as we could.
To coincide with Basquiat, Boom For Real in the Barbican Gallery, which ran from September 2017 to January 2018, Worldwide FM presents The Golden Griot, a soundtrack to the life and art of Jean-Michel Basquiat. Over to presenter and producer Leanne Wright.
From Africa to Caribbean to Europe.
You are turned into worldwide.
FM.
Jean-Michel Basquiat has become one of the most influential artists of the 20th century. Basquiat was a poet, an artist, musician, and a visual storyteller. He was like a human synthesizer, taking in information from the world around him, from books, TV, film, and music, then reprocessing and interpreting it on canvas. He rewrote history, often repositioning many of his African-American heroes. Music was something he referenced frequently in his work. Many of his paintings depict musicians, primarily musicians of color, players of jazz and blues, and he himself was in a band. During the next hour, we'll look at how music touched his life and his art. Basquiat was a music lover and collector. He had a vinyl collection of over 3,000 records, much of it jazz and blues. His tastes were broad and eclectic, from Bach to Bowie, Miles Davis to Public Image Limited, and he listened to music constantly while he painted, sometimes repeating the same song over and over. Music was a major influence in his work as well, often referencing jazz and blues artists, like in the piece Undiscovered Genius of the Mississippi Delta.
To pass the time away.
you'd think a hot foot bottom around my dough, all around my dough. You'd think a hot foot bottom around your daddy's dough. Mm-hmm. It keeps me with rambling mind right on. Every old place I go, every old place I go. I can tell the wind is rising, the leaves trembling on the tree, trembling on the tree. I can tell the wind is rising, leaves trembling on the tree. Mm-hmm. All I need, my little sweet woman, and to keep my company.
Robert Johnson, like Basquiat, died at the age of 27. Basquiat was a restless youth. He left home at the age of 17, drawn to the East Village in New York, where an artistic community was beginning to bubble. Rent was cheap, and artists could afford to live and work. This scene in the late 70s, early 80s, made for a very fertile, creative environment. There were no boundaries for expression. You weren't limited to just being an artist or just being a musician. Different art forms and mediums were utilized. Experimentation was king. The punk and new wave scene was very open. Basquiat felt accepted and at home here and started to become a regular at parties and meet other key players. In 1979, heavily influenced by the no wave movement and artists such as Steve Reich and John Cage, Basquiat formed a band that would eventually be called Grey. New York DJ and producer Justin Strauss describes the band.
Grey's was a band that consisted of Jean Michel, Basquiat, Michael Holman, and Nick Taylor. Those were the three main guys that I knew. They were, you know, around in the New York scene in the early 80s. While Jean Michel was pursuing his art, he also did this, and it was like a jazzy kind of funk, punk meets, and it's hard to describe. I mean, Grey looked amazing. They were always very spiffy and dressed up in nice clothes. And yeah, it was definitely of that time where there were, again, no rules and it didn't really matter. But yeah, they never, Jean Michel's art took over and he became so, you know, well known that he kind of, yeah. Grey sort of fell apart and didn't really continue, or, you know, but it's there, and it was definitely a part of what made him and that scene special, I think, that he was, you know, able to do that. And seriously, it wasn't like a, you know, like a little, you know, he took it very serious.
As his art career famously began to skyrocket, Basquiat left the band shortly after initiating it. Michael Holman and Nick Taylor continue to perform as Grey to this day. Another artist and cultural provocateur on the downtown scene, and very close friend of Jean Michel, was Fred Brathwaite, otherwise known as Fab Five Freddy. He was famously name-checked in Blondie's Rapture, and his influence on the genesis of hip-hop can still be felt today. Fab describes Jean Michel when they first met at a loft party on Canal Street in 1979.
slim, brown skin, black man with a blonde mohawk. Well, he had like a sharp mohawk on the top of his head, and the back had hair. So it was very unique. It looked kind of maybe like some tribe that I had never seen before, but it was very like in the line of punk rock at that time, which was clearly what, you know, he was referencing, but very unusual for a person of color to be doing that, because there weren't hardly any black people that were down with the punk scene or that kind of style. It was, we were like, you know, outside of the mainstream culture, we were aware of that, which we were counterculture. We were actively looking to like just stir shit up in as many ways as we could. On the downtown scene in Manhattan, which is where I decided to go to find support for what I was doing, we were embraced by kind of people from the punk and new wave scenes that were pretty much outcasts themselves in terms of how they were depicted, if you will, or looked at. And so, yeah, it was like an anything goes kind of, you know, let's just create. But nobody was trying to get rich or famous, if you will. We wanted to be known amongst our artistic creative peers in the downtown world and downtown scene. We were just excited to basically both be around people of color that were both on the same track. And so that was what drew us together. We had similar ideas. We both were trying to be artists and try to make things happen, trying to get into a world where there weren't any people of color really doing it. And so that was the genesis of our connection and friendship. Like, that's what we did. Like, work, make art all day, dance to great music at night, and get up and do it all over again.
Justin Strauss, whose career began in the early 80s with residencies at most of the influential clubs on the downtown scene, such as Mud Club, Area, and Tunnel, describes the opening of the Mud Club, one of the first and most influential clubs to open downtown, and a hub and catalyst for artists during the early 80s. It was where, in 1981, Keith Haring invited Futura and Fab Five Freddy to curate a show called Beyond Words, which included their work as well as Basquiat's. It was a place where the whole widely innovative New York scene would converge.
Well, you just had, you know, people like Jean-Michel Basquiat and Keith Haring, and who were, you know, artists or becoming artists, but were also interested in music and other things. And there was no rules. There was no one to say, oh, you're an artist, you just do that. But if you want to, you know, but if they felt like making a record or doing a record cover or being in a performance piece, that all went together. There were no rules. It was just a free for all, basically, of ideas. And you had it was an interesting time in the late 1970s, early 80s, because you had punk music, you had rap music starting, and you had disco and mutant disco, and these three kind of musical things just kind of, you know, just met sort of at this time and at the Mud Club, and it was kind of like where it all just kind of took off. It was the kind of epicenter of the downtown scene at that time for music, for art, for crazy everything. It was a ball of inspiration and excitement. There was nothing really going on downtown. It was like the first kind of thing that happened, kind of as a reaction to a lot of the big discos that were Studio 54, Xenon, all these places. So that seemed to be the meeting place for everyone at night.
The openness and sense of experimentation extended to the music played at the clubs as well.
Lucifer, son of the morning, I'm gonna chase you out of Earth. I'm gonna put on an iron shirt and chase Satan out of Earth. I'm gonna put on an iron shirt and chase the devil out of Earth. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. Satan is a evil-os man, but him can't choke sit on a man. So when I check him, I lass in hand, and if him slip a gun with him hand, I'm gonna put on a iron shirt and chase Satan out of Earth. I'm gonna put on a iron shirt and chase the devil out of Earth. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race.
I mean, the Mud Club was just a mix of everything from, you know, rockabilly to dub to punk to new wave, which was, you know, also emerging. And so, you know, you'd hear, obviously there were some, you know, big records in New York that came from New York that influenced a lot of things, such as ESG, Liquid Liquid, Bush Tetras, all the, you know, the whole downtown scene. And the early hip-hop stuff was also very important, and so we had that, and mixed in with whatever. I mean, it didn't really matter. I didn't know anything at that time about mixing records, beat matter. They didn't even have that kind of setup at the Mud Club. It was really just two turntables, not 1200s that had pitch control or anything. Yeah. It was just kind of telling a story. Whatever worked from, you know, a lot of James Brown was very important at that time. And so, yeah, it was a free for all, really. But and everyone danced to everything. It wasn't like there was this genre separation. It was everything worked, which was kind of the idea of the Mud Club. Keeping on my best and the best of best of keeping on my best and the best of best of
One of the next clubs to open was Area, which was more of a creative concept space than a club, a real playground for artists of all kinds.
Area was kind of another groundbreaker as far as nightlife in New York City goes, and I don't think there's ever been another club like it. It's more like an art project. There's just an incredible amount of creativity involved in that place. So it was a very unique experience that I've never kind of seen again. It was just perfect.
Justin and Jean-Michel DJed at Area often on the same nights.
He was playing in the back bar, which wasn't like a, you know, a hardcore. It was more like a lounge thing. And he would be playing a lot of jazz, Miles Davis, abstract stuff, a lot of dub. So it was mostly a mixture of that, some soul stuff, some, you know, early hip-hop. And yeah, it was just a kind of a disjointed but funky and cool and chill, and you know, it was but a lot of jazz. I remember some Augustus Pablo and some Miles Davis, a lot of stuff I didn't even know, you know, which was always cool because you know, I wasn't the biggest jazz person, but you know, turned on to a lot of just listening to a lot of cool free, you know, free jazz and stuff like that, and blues he would play, and just, you know, original kind of rootsy music is what he was channeling, I think.
These downtown clubs were pivotal in helping to support an explosion of creative output and what was to become one of the most influential cultural revolutions in recent history, a ripple effect that can still be felt around the world to this day.
So the clubs were really where everything started, as far as I could see. From, you know, it's like where I first got turned on to these people and met them, and where they did early work, you know, and the owner, like he, Steve Mass, just gave them a, you know, just carte blanche. It was just an organic thing back then. It was very small. The scene was very small. Everyone knew each other. And like when you went into the Mud Club, it was like going into someone's living room, basically. An area was just kind of a more blown up version of that, you know, and with the celebrities. I mean, although we had, you know, David Bowie, Mick Jagger, all these people started coming to the Mud Club, and Andy Warhol, of course. And Andy Warhol was kind of, you know, a huge influence to me. And he was very influential in the careers of Jean-Michel and Keith, you know, recognizing their brilliance early on and bridging those worlds of the established art world and the downtown scene. And he could, you know, mingle through both of them, sure. And connect people. And he was very understated, but very cool like that.
Sleeping Bag Records was a great example of the merging of some of these genres, like disco and the beginnings of hip-hop, electro, and house.
Sleeping Bag Records, again, was started by Will Sokolov and Arthur Russell. So you had Arthur Russell doing left-field, mutant, crazy disco tracks, and then they kind of Mantronix came into the fold and brought in the hip hop, the, you know, kind of electro hip hop that he was doing, that was hugely influential to me as a producer and stuff. And there was a record that Larry Levan remixed called Heartbeat by Tanya Gardner that was huge in the Paradise Garage and huge in the Mud Club and area. Clubs is like, that's where records were broken. Yeah. Like sleeping bag. I mean, Will would bring me acetates of Joyce. Like, I'd be the first person to play a lot of these records, and I had never even heard it before. But I knew, like, if he's bringing me something, it's going to be great. Yeah. So I would put it on, just unheard. And I remember the first time he brought me Joyce Sims, All in All. I was spinning at Area, and he's like, "But we just came from the mastering. You should check this out." Curtis Mantronix produced it. I'm like, okay. And I put it on, and the place went nuts, and it just became like an anthem.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Alongside the post-punk, new wave, and disco scenes, another new sound, and in fact an entire culture, was also emerging.
Say up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogity beat. Now what you hear is not a test. I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello. Up to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, and the purple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang, bang the boogie to the boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the bang, bang boogie. Let's rock. You don't stop, rock the rhythm, that'll make your body rock. Well, so far you've heard my voice, but I brought two friends along. And next on the mic is my man Hank. Come on, Hank, sing that song.
Check it out, I'm the C-A-S-N, the O-V-A, and the rest is F-L-Y. You see, I go by the code of the doctor of the mix, and these reasons I'll tell you why. You see, I'm 6'1", and I'm tons of fun, and I dress to a T. You see, I got more clothes than Muhammad Ali, and I dress so viciously. I got bodyguards, I got two big cars that definitely ain't the whack. I got a Lincoln Continental and some new Cadillac. So after school, I take a dip in the pool, which is really on the wall. I got a color TV so I can see the Knicks play basketball. Hear me talk on my checkbook, credit cards, more money than a sucker could ever spend. But I wouldn't give a sucker or a punk from the rock, not a dime till I made it again. Everybody go, hotel, motel, what you gonna do today? Cause I'm gonna get a fly girl, gonna get some spank and drive off in a death OJ. Everybody go.
Basquiat's notable art making began on the streets with friend Al Diaz, tagging poetic slogans under the name Samo. text remained a big part of his work on canvas. His technique of sampling and scratching out words was very akin to techniques used in hip-hop production. He said of this technique, "I cross out words so you will see them more. The fact that they are obscured makes you want to read them." Fab Five Freddy is undoubtedly one of the forefathers of hip-hop in that he helped germinate this revolutionary and all-encompassing culture. The early DJs, breakbeats, MCs, graffiti, breakdancing, and fashion. He brought it all together in 1983 in the first ever hip-hop film, Wild Style.
Going back to the late 60s, there were the beginning of disco happened. There were black and Latin mobile DJs that took their sound systems from party to party, house to house or whatever. And the idea of keeping the music going continuously was this revelation. Like you'd use a mixer, you'd play one record and you'd mix into the next record. And then from that idea of the mobile DJ, guys in the Bronx did something different where they played and like these instrumental records with a certain attitude that became known as breakbeats. And they began to play these records. And then the idea of cutting and scratching developed as a kind of a way to remix the music live and direct manually. And then guys would rap over that. That later became known as hip hop.
Fab had played Jean-Michel tapes recorded at some of the parties where DJs and MCs were beginning to experiment. He was instrumental in introducing Basquiat to hip-hop.
I had examples of this, which I shared, explained to Jean, played some of these live party tapes, and he, of course, got into that. Soon after, the first rap records would begin to come out, records by the Sugar Hill Gang, like, you know, The Treacherous Three, Funky 4+1. So he became a fan of that as well, because it was just great music. The idea that I pitched to Charlie Ahern, who was the director and my co-collaborator on what became hip-hop's first film, Wild Style. And my idea for that film that I took to him was to find a way that showed that these particular different activities were connected. Graffiti writing, breakdancing, DJing, rapping. I felt that they were one thing. There was no connection of these things prior. So my idea was, I want to show that these things are one thing. I want to show that people that look like me are making a viable, interesting new culture. And I wanted to showcase it because people that were black and Latin and from the streets were only portrayed as criminals and the problems going on in the city at that time in the 70s. And my idea was to showcase these activities and to show people that we are artists.
Fab explains why he feels hip-hop and its culture took off and became a worldwide phenomenon.
I look at hip-hop culture, when you get it right, as like an algorithm that when executed will replicate itself in the same way. Like if you have the same kind of intention as a way for people that don't have a voice to speak up and to stand up and say, well, here I am, baby, take a look at who I am and what I'm doing. You know what I mean? People in other languages were able to pick that up just from the visuals that they were able, without understanding a word of English, to be like, yo, those guys look like us. I understand where they coming from. They from ghettos. They pretty much poor people. And we could feel like what they talking about, you know? And I'm like, that alone was enough to spark a movement.
Jean-Michel vibes off this fresh new sound and energy, so much so that he produced an early rap record called Beat Bop. He also created the cover art. It's now one of the holy grails of record collectors.
Jean-Michel produced it, and that came out of me having introduced him to this music. And like I told you earlier, starting to hear the beginnings of rap records happening. And this was before rap records had a lot of structure. So some of these early records like Sugar Hill Gang's Rapper's Delight, et cetera, et cetera, would go on for like 7, 8, 10, 12 minutes long. And Jean was like, shit, I can do this. And there was a young protege of mine, a guy by the name of Ramel Z. I introduced him to Jean-Michel because we were also looking to bring other people into this space we had infiltrated. So we didn't want people to think that we were the only two people from the graffiti street art world. Jean knew that Ramel Z could also rap. So he heard him rapping and he said, man, I'm gonna book some studio time unless, you know, they put a track together. And Ramel Z and this other kid named K-Rob, who was a young kid that used to hang around on the scene, and they both, you know, he took him into the studio and they made Beat Bop.
Get funky if you take this, but daddy don't. Addicts have to be abused. It's just saying what a thing to be a prostitute. Life is given to us just to do the right thing. Instead of that, we came a whole wall with big dope feet. Makes you feel real bad every time I see another bum old brother sleeping on the street. In the corner, in the morning, every night and day. It's a pity, so many people try to act gay. Everybody's turning crazy, so you better believe to do the right things, or soon you'll see. Life ain't no more joke, it's a serious thing. When you're dealing with the answers that you can't explain. New York City is a place of mysteries. Drug addicts, dope dealers taking over the street. That mayor's always saying, why the hell do we pay for what? Well, they break the laws and get a couple of days. No sense trying to help, it's really no use. Think the world's messing up, let me tell you the truth. Hard rocks trying to pop with no respect. Niggas waiting at the station for the big paycheck. Homeboys going vacant on Thursday night. Girls waiting in the house for Mr. Right. Kids going to school just to be a fool. Never wanna learn to work just to go to a school. It's the funky beat, and it's the funky beat, and it's the funk, and it's the funky beat. Yeah.
This is the mellow they call the rail bell. The rocks are with the rhythm that a shock can spell. When the shake up kick, the wakes you up in the morning. Gotta rake with the rhythm like a number one groaning. MC quick, just to make you peanut butter. Shock with the rhythm, I'm a number one undercover. Bring it up, just shake it up, rodeo. Bring it up, just shake it up, rodeo. I'm the melody down with the funky sound that can make you break with my diamond studded crown. Just for making you dip like a little bit of dive, like a rat. Just for making you hide, rock on to the break of dawn. Just freaking, yeah, baby. Just freaking, yeah, baby. Like a little jelly bean, I'm a sweet like a candy cane. To make you get down, this is number one stain on the train. Just moving like a stage jaw, just bringing up, yeah, yeah. Stage jaw, like a roller coaster ride, like a make you bump. Just grooving with the rhythm as you shake your rump. You got the rock, you don't stop. The baby, yo, you got it now, rocking, you don't stop. Just hip hop.
Beat Bop is a play on what is undoubtedly Basquiat's favorite genre of music, bebop.
Thank you.
Despite his wide and eclectic taste in music, jazz was his first love. And if jazz was his religion, then Charlie Parker was the high priest.
Certainly he was fascinated by Charlie Parker. Many times he celebrated him in one of the collaborations between Basquiat and Andy Warhol, when they redid the logo of the Arm and Hammer baking soda. The transformation of the logo by Basquiat, the logo becomes a kind of coin dedicated to Charlie Parker with his date of death. And Basquiat associated himself or projected himself not only into Charlie Parker, but also in other creators of new styles of music.
Francesco Martinelli is a jazz historian and was a consultant and contributor to the Boom for Real exhibition at the Barbican.
Well, you know, the styles were in jazz, so we have a number of phases of styles. The styles were never defined by their creators. So there is no Charlie Parker, no Miles Davis, not Thelonious Monk that jumped up and say, now we're going to play bebop from now on. So bebop is a description that applies to a certain style of jazz that emerged in the early 40s, which was in a way a reaction to the major white-dominated style of swing. Swing is another style of jazz, mostly played for dance, mostly played for by big bands. And bebop emerged as a kind of extreme swing in the other direction of the pendulum. It was played by small bands, by small groups, in the small clubs, not in big ballrooms. It was very complex harmonically. It didn't have a very obvious rhythm. It was not the definition of underlying rhythm was not clear to the lay listener. It was a little bit of a closed clique of musicians playing new compositions or using old composition in a kind of contrafact way, as we say in the history of jazz.
Bebop broke away from the restraints of the traditional cornerstones of Western music: harmony, melody, and rhythmic progression. Like the beboppers, Basquiat destroyed the rule books, remixing and reinventing through his art. He created visual pauses and free space, appropriating standard structure, then deconstructing and improvising. Basquiat related to these young, vibrant iconoclasts who had broken the mold of tradition and used the power of their art form to create a new and unique voice for their people and establish viable artistic and historic references.
I think Basquiat felt himself at odds with the general, the general culture, the general civilization, in the same way that these people were at odds with their time. And the continuous critique by the bebop musicians of the cultural model through, for example, the employing quotations. Charlie Parker solos use a lot of quotations from other musical works, from opera, from opera songs, from other jazz pieces, in much in the same way that Basquiat uses found material to just expose them and change the meaning of them. So it's It's a way of approaching popular culture that resonates a lot with Basquiat words. For example, there is one famous quotation by Charlie Parker in a solo in a composition called Coco. At some point, he quotes Popeye, the song of Popeye, the Sailor Man. And Basquiat does the same, using the cartoon's characters in his paintings.
Basquiat identified with the levels of celebrity and success these young black musicians had achieved, only to turn and still face racial discrimination.
Successful jazz musicians since Armstrong time, Armstrong, Ellington, Miles, all of them had to deal with these represent themselves in a way which was not causing some anxiety to the great white audiences. As the successful artists, there were many artists that could not find a proper strategy to deal with this. And I don't know how much Basquiat did, in fact, because his biography is such that he maybe didn't find a balance between all these different factors. He wanted to be a star. He became a star. At the same time, he was probably always under pressure from these type of factors.
Jean-Michel Basquiat did indeed shoot to superstardom in a few short years between 1980 and the year he died, 1988. He was the first artist of color to reach such dizzying heights, and to this day, he continues to inspire artists and musicians around the world. Playing us out is London saxophonist Shabaka Hutchins with his homage, A Portrait of Jean-Michel Basquiat. I'm The Golden Griot was produced, presented, and written by Leanne Wright and edited by George Haskell. Special thanks to Fred Brathwaite, Justin Strauss, Francesco Martinelli, and all the other participants involved in the making of this story.
Thanks for listening to this archive edition of Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast, here to inspire more people to discover and love the arts with weekly episodes of archive finds such as this and themed series. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.